én kofferidem és ne zsáj. Lepáté samostámi van tiszte dolgok, hogy nékene. Tom dolgok szavarát a patrőr. Én ezt pedig nem tudom, fremben a patrőr meg is. Patrőr dolgok zagléden Madonna en Oswald.
Rys.
Je bil palně, mlad, mlad, je to ty siu, siu, ne ta němské občany, ten černý batom, pro ty sta pravo, vok, krásný.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiju Študent.
Vstopa v azijsko stoletje. V Indiji, sodeč po rezultatih zadnjih volitev, duh časa poseblja novi premier Narendra Modi. Zmaga njegove hindujske nacionalistične stranke Bharatiya Janata Party, krajše BJP, je bila pričakovana. Presenetljiva pa je prepričljivost te zmage. BJP je dobila 31% vseh glasov, kar se je v indijskem večinskem volilnem sistemu prelilo v 52% sedežev v parlamentu. Po rezultatu ji sledi nacionalna kongresna stranka z borih 8,1% sedežev, kar ji ne omogoča niti statusa uradne opozicije. To predstavlja najprepričljivejšo zmago na volitvah v Indiji po letu 1984, ko je zmagala nacionalna kongresna stranka, katere predsednico Indiro Gandhi so umorili le nekaj mesecev prej. Rezultati volitev Narendri Modiju omogočajo vladanje brez koalicije, kar upoštevajoč njegovo nacionalistično neoliberalno ideologijo in avtoritarno preteklost v mnogih vzbuja skrb. Narendra Modi se je kot rad poudarjal v svojem političnem življenju rodil v zvezni državi Gujarat v družini nižjega razreda. Kot otrok je pomagal očetu in stricu prodajati čaj na stojnici pred železniško postajo v domačem kraju. Že pri 8 letih je prvič prišel v kontakt s hindujsko nacionalistično skupino Raštrija Svajamsevak Sang, krajše RSS. Pri 20 pa so ga zaposlili kot aktivista. RSS je militantna hindujska nacionalistična organizacija, nastala leta 1925, ki Indijo vidi kot izključno hinduistično državo. Aktivistično mrežo ima razpredeno po celotni Indiji. Poleg propagandnih namenov je ta uporabljena tudi za pomoč ob naravnih nesrečah in druge dobrodelne akcije. Zaradi stopnje organiziranosti je RSS in njeno razvejeno mrežo večkrat uporabila tudi indijska vlada. Naprimer med vojnami s Pakistanom, ko so nacionalistični aktivisti nadzorovali Deli in s tem razbremenili policiste. Zaradi mešanice ekstremnega nacionalizma in visoke stopnje organiziranosti jih mnogi primerjajo z evropskimi nacističnimi gibanji. Celo sami v evropskih gibanjih iz 30 let vidijo vzornike, a izpostavljajo, da se ne zavzemajo za rasno, temveč kulturno čistost. A taka razlaga ne pomiri več kot 200 milijonov muslimanov in številnih drugih pripadnikov manjšin v Indiji, v pogromih, nad katerimi je bila RSS večkrat upletena. Leta 1985 je bil Modi premeščen v BJP, kjer se je hitro vzpenjal po hierarhiji in v naslednjem desetletju in pol zasedal številne položaje v Gujaratu kot tudi v Deliju. Konec leta 2001 je bil po odstopu Kešubaja Patela nastavljen za guvernerja Gujarata, mesto, ki ga je zasedal vse do imenovanja za premijeja dobre 3 tedne nazaj. Dogodki v Gudžaratu iz začetka leta 2002 so ga močno zaznamovali kot politično osebnost. 27. februarja je na vzhodu zvezne države v požaru na vlaku, katerega izvor še danes ni pojasnjen, umrlo 59 ljudi, večinoma hindujskih romarjev. Sledil je pogrom nad muslimansko manjšino, ki naj bi bila odgovorna, v katerem je umrlo med 1000 in 2000 ljudi. Komisija Modijeve administracije je kasneje ugotovila, da je požig povzročila množica 1000 do 2000 muslimanov, medtem ko je zvezna komisija to množico očitno spregledala in ugotovila, da je bil požar rezultat nesreče. Modi sam nikoli ni bil obsojen za svoje dejanja v tem času, a obstajajo številni dokazi, da namenoma ni ukrepal dovolj hitro in odločno. O njegovi vpletenosti v pogrom v Gudžaratu smo se pogovarjali s Priyambado Gopal, profesorico južnoazijske književnosti na Univerzi v Cambridgeu in komentatorko indijskega političnega dogajanja.
There are very strong questions about his role in the so-called riots, some people would call them pogroms, in 2002 when nearly 800 Muslims and some 200 Hindus were killed. There is certainly plenty of evidence to suggest that there was nothing spontaneous about these riots, that they were orchestrated and that there were state actors involved in it. One of his ministers, a woman by the name of Maya Kodnani, was in fact convicted for her role in the killings. And questions remain about Modi's role in them, primarily around whether he actively, through his rhetoric, fomented an atmosphere of hatred and violence, and also whether he possibly instructed or was involved in instructing state forces like the police to not act when Muslims were being killed. He has been supposedly cleared by an investigative tribunal, but all we really know is that the investigative tribunal said that there was not sufficient direct evidence to implicate him. The tribunal also noted that large amounts of documentation and records had been destroyed, and therefore they were not able to find evidence because that evidence was no longer available. So although there is an argument made by Modi's supporters that he's been given a so-called clean chit, questions still remain, and judicial processes that have been instigated by some of the victims are still in motion.
Tudi v državnozborski kampanji je Modi igral na noto nacionalizma in anti-islamizma. Govoril je o izgonu infiltratorjev iz muslimanskega Bangladeša in zaščiti hindujskih beguncev. Mačistično se je bahal s svojimi velikimi prsmi, ki naj bi mu omogočale odločnost. A njegova zmaga ni le rezultat nacionalističnega sentimenta. Rast indijskega gospodarstva se je v zadnjih 3 letih skoraj prepolovila. Vladajoča kongresna stranka pa je bila vpletena v številne korupcijske škandale. Modi je obljubljal preporod gospodarstva, ki je v času njegove vladavine v Gudžaratu hitro raslo. Rast je seveda najljubša beseda lastnikov kapitala, mnogokrat pa jo povzroča nižanje delovskih pravic in rahljanje okoljskih standardov. Na tak način je gospodarstvo vodil tudi Modi, zato Priyambada Gopal meni, da ni le nacionalistični ekstremist.
Really, I think he is also represents a different kind of extremism, which is neoliberal extremism. He is a votary of corporate capitalism. He has, in his time as the chief minister of Gujarat, he has made every effort to allow big corporations to have their way. He's given them lots of special privileges, including decreeing parts of the state to be special economic zones where state laws don't apply, where corporations can in fact run riot in terms of environmental degradation and displacing poor people. So the Indian business elite and indeed the multinational business elite are extremely happy with Narendra Modi because he has always shown himself willing to be on their side as opposed to the side of poor people or the displaced or the environment. And we can already see that in his first weeks as prime minister, environmental regulations are being weakened, you know, fast track environmental clearances being given to projects, and foreign direct investment in India is going to be increased. So he is very much a business, not just a business, but a big business friendly politician. And the corporations, the large corporations of India, including the those run by the Ambanis, the Tatas and the Adanis, threw their money and their considerable media clout behind him.
Kot omenja Gopalova, so Modija zaradi njegove volje v streči kapitalu podprli največji indijski lastniki kapitala. Vplivni član družine Tata, ki ima v lasti konglomerat vreden več kot 100 milijard dolarjev, ga je hvalil kot odločnega voditelja, medtem ko ga je najbogatejši Indijec Mukesh Ambani razglasil za človeka z vizijo in kralja kraljev. Podprli pa ga seveda niso le retorično. Večina indijskih medijev je v privatni lasti in tekom kampanje so mnogi odkrito podpirali Modija. Znanih je nekaj primerov odpuščanja urednikov in novinarjev, ki niso odkrito podpirali kandidata indijske elite. Tak primer je odpustitev Siddhartha Varadarayana, urednika enega izmed največjih časnikov v državi The Hindu, ki je bil Modiju odkrito nenaklonjen. Pod njegovim urednikovanjem so novinari gradili tudi zgodbo o nepravilnostih pri prevzemu medijske hiše NewsX strani prej omenjenega Ambanija. Pod novim uredništvom zgodba ni prišla v tisk. Tudi Hartoš Bal, urednik časnika Open, je bil odpuščen zaradi političnega nestrinjanja z lastnikom, industrialcem in multimilionarjem Sanjivom Goenko. Poleg medijske pokritosti je indijska elita Modijevo kampanjo zasula tudi z denarjem. Po besedah člana Modijevega štaba je bila njegova predvolilna kampanja vredna kar 670 milijonov dolarjev, verjetno pa je številka v resnici še višja. Indija je torej naredila odločen korak proti ameriškemu dojemanju demokracije, v skladu s katerim korporacije lahko vlagajo neomejene količine denarja v predvolilne kampanje. Podporo največjih poslovnih konglomeratov v državi Modijevemu štabu nam je opisal Praful Bidvai, indijski novinar in aktivist.
20,000 television spots on prime time channels on television every day. They had thousands of newspaper advertisements, full page advertisements, which literally cost millions of rupees per day. And Modi regularly flew in a private airplane belonging to a business group called Adani's. The Adanis are based in Gujarat, and their wealth has increased 12 times in the last 15 years under Modi. It's a very aggressive group, and when Modi finally came to Delhi to be sworn in, he flew the Adanis plane. Although he could have got a government plane, he could have used the Gujarat government plane, he could have used the central government plane, whatever, but he did not. So it's just a very revealing thing that you have such, you know, blatant identification of the Prime Minister of India with a particular business group.
Kombinacija nacionalističnega ekstremizma, močnih povezav s kapitalom in medijske cenzure je porodila označevalec hindutva neoliberalizem. Ta povezuje ideologijo hindujske nadvlade z laissez-faire ekonomskim modelom. Gopalova nam razloži, kaj je hindutva neoliberalizem in zakaj je na zadnjih volitvah uspel.
It's a complex and interesting relationship. I think that in one sense, the fast-growing middle classes of India, who are overwhelmingly Hindu, I mean, it's the Hindu middle classes, the Hindu upper caste middle classes who have done very well by globalization and neoliberalism. I think for them, on the one hand, as they become assimilated into a kind of faceless global capitalism, they need an identity of their own. And so, in a sense, Hindutva has been able to provide them a kind of aggressive nationalist identity at the same time as they become part of a sort of largely faceless, prosperous, global middle class. So it allows them to, on the one hand, become globalized and, on the other hand, cling to what seems like a highly specific and uniquely Indian identity. I think also that, you know, neoliberalism works through division, and it works through fragmenting the working classes and the rural poor. And what Hindutva has been able to do is to foster divisions among people who are disenfranchised, who are marginalized, and prevent a kind of a coalescing or a coalition between the rural and the urban poor and different castes. It's also been able to keep in place aggressive caste distinctions, and so I think it's had a kind of double use for neoliberalism. It's allowed an aggressive nationalism to develop at the same time as India globalizes furiously, and on the other hand, it works to prevent the coming together, the sort of solidarity of working class and the rural poor.
Omenjena ideologija ima torej očitne znake fašizma. Z izgradnjo nacionalistične identitete zgornjega in srednjega razreda ter s fragmentacijo delovstva in kmetstva na dolgi rok omogoča razvoj trga. Tako tezo potrdi tudi naša sogovorka.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that although people are very hesitant to make the comparison to 1930s Germany, actually there are some very striking comparisons, including the fact, of course, that Modi has been elected through a democratic process. But there's a way in which democracy in this instance simply means majoritarianism. And what he has come in on is a majoritarian vote, and a majoritarian vote that is also a strong vote in favor of a kind of authoritarian capitalism. One of the things that distinguished his governance style in Gujarat is actually authoritarianism, that he was not a consultative leader, and that he took a lot of decisions on his own, and consultative bodies were often marginalized. So, in fact, when you say, that these are the conditions for fascism, I think you're exactly right, that we have a lethal confluence of an authoritarian style of governance, rampant neoliberalism, and aggressive religious majoritarian assertion. And these are precisely the breeding grounds for fascism and certainly for a form of authoritarianism, maybe leading to totalitarianism. You know, how this will play out in the Indian context remains to be seen, but the conditions are extremely worrying.
Za ilustracijo slepote indijskega srednjega razreda, ki podcenjuje nevarnost Modijeve izvolitve in v njem vidi vizionarskega voditelja, vam predvajamo del pogovora s predsednico Centra za politične študije na Univerzi Jawaharlala Nehruja, Vidu Verma.
The kind of support Narendra Modi got as an individual across the states in India has been very interesting, because it also shows that it has a lot to do with an individual's charisma, it has a lot to do with the individual's efforts, which might actually outgrow the party. So to what extent this is Modi's victory or BJP's victory, we will know with the times to come. But at the moment, yes, he is seen as an individual who has been talking about putting the economy back on track. He wants to take tough measures, he wants to see that the industries serve the country. And he does talk about benefiting the people and so on. And he's been able to, create aspirations in the people for a better future in India. So I think to that extent, it's been a great election.
Samo karikaturo Hindutva neoliberalne ideologije višjih slojev v Indiji predstavlja tudi pesem Namo Youth Anthem, ki jo je v predvolilnem času na čast Modiju spesnil indijski reper Krishan Sugavanan. Ta precej neprikrito poveličuje Modijeve avtoritarne in nacionalistične kvalitete. Prisluhnimo.
Namo listen up, India. Now is the time for change. Pump up the volume and let's go. In 1, 2, 3, and 4. He was a commoner who started just as a tea vendor. Now he is a conqueror, we call him the last airbender. A powerful orator will now become the nation's curator. His persona is athletic, his charisma magnetic. Common man, cogent man, moment man, exponent man, proponent man, employment man, improvement man, involvement man. Who's gonna carry us?
Namo, Namo.
Who's gonna bear us?
Namo, Namo.
Who's gonna free us?
Namo, Namo.
Who's gonna see us?
Namo.
Who's gonna dare him?
Namo, Namo.
Who's gonna scare him?
Namo, Namo.
Who's gonna mar him?
Namo, Namo.
Who's gonna scar him?
Namo.
Leader, speaker, tweeter, keeper, eager, dreamer, seeker, preacher. Who's the man? He's the man. Just be his beginning. Always puts India first, ready to quench every thirst. Country is his family, everywhere he moves happily. Nation first is secularism, committed against terrorism. Who's got the flair?
Namo, Namo.
Who's got the glare?
Namo, Namo.
Who's declared?
Namo, Namo.
No compare.
Namo.
Voice of India.
Namo, Namo.
Choice of India.
Namo, Namo.
Voice of India.
Namo, Namo.
Choice of India.
Predvolilne pesmi, kakršna je bila ta, ki smo jo ravno kar poslušali, so bile v tokratni kampanji popularnejše kot kdajkoli prej. Eden izmed Modijevih protikandidatov si je za svojo tematsko pesem izbral priredbo komada We Didn't Start the Fire. Glede na dogodke v Gujaratu pred dobrim desetletjem bi ta morda bolj sodila v zmagovalčevo kampanjo. Kaj pa zmaga morebitnega požigalca pomeni na zunanje političnem parketu? Mednarodna skupnost pod vodstvom ZDA z avtoritarnimi režimi po svetu nima problema, dokler ti ščitijo njihove interese. Se pa radi postavljajo kot branik človekovih pravic tam, kjer so njihovi interesi manjšega pomena. To se kaže tudi na primeru Modija. Po pogromu nad muslimani v Gujaratu leta 2002 so ZDA kot tudi Velika Britanija zaradi skrbi glede svobode veroizpovedi Modiju zavrnile vstopno vizo. A njihovo stališče glede tega je naredilo obrat za 180 stopinj, ko je postalo jasno, da bo Modi po vsej verjetnosti novi indijski premier. Obama ga je po izvolitvi nemudoma povabil v Belo hišo. Gopalova je pokomentirala Modijevo zmago stališča odnosov med Indijo in ZDA.
For the United States, this is a very standard alliance. I mean, here we have a politician who is who has come up on an Islamophobic platform, who is explicitly willing to be an ally on the so-called war on terror, who is willing to be a part of an axis that includes Israel, India, and the United States. You know, this is the axis that Hindutva has always backed. So I think that for the US, this is actually a very handy alliance at this point in time, because on the one hand, you have a very powerful regional ally in the so-called war on terror. And on the other hand, you have a government that is going to open up India to 100% foreign investment and is going to be a military and strategic ally in a kind of Islamophobic global policy. So there is really nothing for the US to lose here as long as there aren't any explicit pogroms or riots or problematic incidents.
Z ZDA na indijski podcelini potrebujejo zaveznika v vojni proti terorizmu, predvsem za stabilizacijo Afganistana. Zaradi domnevne dvojne igre, ki jo pri tem igra Pakistan, Washington želi zanesljivejšega zaveznika. Poleg tega grožnja večje vloge Indije v Afganistanu povzroča pritisk na Pakistan, tradicionalnega indijskega tekmeca. Zmaga hindujskega supremacista zato ni dobra novica za odnose z muslimansko sosedo. Obe državi sta jedrski sili, v preteklosti pa sta se že večkrat zapletli v spopade, predvsem zaradi nestrinjanja glede statusa Kašmirja. Del tega območja, Kašmirska dolina, je namreč po odcepitvi Pakistana od Indije ostala ozemlje slednje, čeprav jo poseljuje večinoma muslimansko prebivalstvo. A tudi skrb glede odnosov med jedrskima silama, ki so še kako pomembni za mednarodno skupnost, je bila v zahodnih medijih zadnje tedne precej podcenjevana. To je rezultat spretne in medijsko dobro pokrite poteze Modija, ki je pakistanskega premijeja povabil na svojo inauguracijo. Gopalova ta poteza ni pomirila.
So far we've seen a lot of gesture politics and it, to me it is unsurprising gesture politics, you know, that you know, you come on board and you say you're going to be inclusive and you're going to be tolerant and you're going to have a an emollient foreign policy. And all that's very well, but that in the long run is not going to play out simply by inviting someone to an inaugural dinner. There is the very thorny question of Kashmir, which is not going to be resolved by shaking hands with the Pakistani Prime Minister. Again, we have to remember that the Indian mainstream and certainly the Hindutva base that Modi is accountable to is very aggressive on Kashmir and in fact is now involved in removing the special status that Kashmir has, you know, the autonomy that Kashmir has had since independence, and they want Kashmir to no longer have special status and to be integrated with the rest of India. This is not going to fly well with the Pakistani establishment, and it is not going to fly well with sentiments in Kashmir itself. So exactly how he is going to pander to the Hindu right on Kashmir and maintain cordial relations with Pakistan is an interesting question. It seems to me absolutely impossible. So we really need to see what happens once the gesture politics are over and the actual engagement with the problem of Kashmir begins. And that's just one instance.
Odprto ostaja tudi vprašanje odnosov s Kitajsko. Slednja je vedno bolj odločna pri uveljavljanju svojih interesov v Aziji. Z izvolitvijo Modija pa morda dobiva odločnejšo tekmico na celini. Poleg tekmice pa, po mnenju Gopalove, mnogi Indijci v Kitajski vidijo tudi vzornico.
Modi is a great admirer of China, and so are a great many Indian votaries of neoliberalism. I mean, one of the things that they envy China for is that they see China as, correctly, I think, as a perfect combination of neoliberalism and authoritarianism. So there is no democracy as such. And many Indian middle-class people will say that India's problem has always been democracy, that we have to always go through all these procedures to get, you know, business permits and, you know, and there's all these pesky regulations and things get debated in parliament and nothing ever happens. And Modi actually, in some sense, represents that strand in Indian opinion, which is very drawn to an authoritarian state that fosters neoliberalism.
Ali se bo tudi v Indiji razvil kitajski model avtoritarne države, ki s trdo roko trgu zagotavlja svobodo, bo pokazal čas. Dejstvo pa je, da je Narendra Modi s hindutva neoliberalno ideologijo in dokazanimi sposobnostmi njenega doslednega izvajanja predstavlja kandidata, ki bi državo lahko obrnil v to smer. Dejstvo je tudi, da mu je kljub 31-odstotni podpori volivcev večinski volilni sistem namenil več kot polovico sedežev v parlamentu in s tem, da dal močan mandat za preobrazbo države. V V Aziji očitno vedno bolj prevladuje drugačen pristop k kapitalizmu kakor na Zahodu. Liberalna demokracija pri nas vsaj navidezno blaži trenja, ki jih povzroča kapitalizem sam. V hitro rastočih azijskih državah, od Kitajske in Vietnama do Singapurja, Tajske in ponovem, kot vse kaže tudi Indije, pa je demokracija le še ovira pri nadaljni rasti. Legitimnost oblastem v teh državah se podeljuje na podlagi tistih gospodarskih kazalcev, ki najbolj ustrezajo kapitalski eliti. Identiteta se prav tako kot v Indiji, tudi na Japonskem, Kitajskem, Tajskem in v Vietnamu ter Koreji, gradi na nacionalističnih in verskih temeljih. 21. stoletje naj bi bilo azijsko. Smo pripravljeni na... Časa je dokumentiral Twitter.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, je pa te samo ostane, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa treba, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna in ošla.
Res.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in tudi siv, ne ta nemški očaj, črn pa to ne, prav tista prava volna, ne, krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiju Študent.